Cape Talk.
Health and wellness.
Now, our focus is on the pharmacy today, from self-medication to basic first aid supplies, questions about the use and storage of drugs, questions about children and medication. Anything like that is welcome. Please get calling now. And by way of extra incentive, let me tell you that our most interesting caller of the day will win a copy of Linda Bai's illustrated South African First Aid Manual, which is a really great book. It's a very comprehensive but very simple to follow book with very clear written and pictorial instructions on how to deal with first aid emergencies, from cuts and bruises to burns to heat stroke, alcohol poisoning, what to do if someone's having an asthma attack, a huge range of first aid topics covered, as well as advice on what you should keep in your first aid kit. I would like to give a copy away to the most interesting caller of the segment, so please get dialing on 021-446-0567. Now, by way of preparation for today, last night we decided to do a bit of a random test and phone up a pharmacist and simply pose a question to them. What are the five things that you really wish more of your customers knew? And we're going to share those five things from our pharmacist with you in a little while. We also have another guest who's particularly well-informed on self-medication joining us. But firstly, it's a great pleasure to welcome MChem co-owner and pharmacist Gillian Watson. Gillian, great to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's a great pleasure to have you with us.
That's nice to be with you.
Good. Also on the line is Dr. Deepa Maharaj, who is chairman at SMASA, which is the Self-Medication Manufacturers Association of South Africa. Dr. Maharaj is the chair of their regulatory and technical committee, also a qualified pharmacist with a long list of additional qualifications in health, economics and management. Lovely to have you with us as well. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And hello to all your listeners.
I'm going to start, if I may, with Gillian. The question we posed last night was a simple one. What are the five rules of thumb of such that you wish your clients all knew, or that you think more people should know? What five things did you pick out, Gillian?
Well, I thought most importantly is two-way communication. Mm-hmm. I think it's terribly important that the pharmacist understands exactly who he's dealing with. You need to provide your pharmacist with relevant information. For example, are you pregnant or breastfeeding? Do you have high blood pressure or are you diabetic? You've come in looking for a cough mixture. Even the most simple cough mixture can push blood pressure sky high, mm-hmm. and we need to know to avoid those and stick to safer options. Are you asthmatic? Some medications cause severe asthma attacks and should be avoided. Are you epileptic? Are you porphyric? If the pharmacist knows these things, he can help you to select the safest option. And of course, very importantly, we need to know if you're allergic to anything. Mm-hmm. Anti-inflammatories can be a big issue. Penicillin, the sulfas. Or what other medication are you containing? Are you taking? An epileptic, for example, could come in and admit to tell you he's epileptic and he's well controlled, and you put him on something for his flu, and his epilepsy is no longer controlled and he throws a fit. Yeah. We really want to avoid that happening.
Okay. So very important to be very open and communicative with your pharmacist. That was number one. Okay.
Absolutely. Well, but it's two-way. So the second part of the communication process is to listen to the advice and the instructions that your pharmacist gives you. You know, medication can be taken in very bad combinations with food and other medicines. A fabulous example that I thought I could give is thyroid medication. Over 2.5 million South Africans are taking medication for their thyroid. Thyroid medication needs to be taken in the morning on an absolutely empty stomach. Mm. And it interacts with certain antacids, which people are taking regularly. And the problem with thyroid medication, it's not like a headache. If you've got a headache and you take a headache pill and the pill doesn't work, you know it hasn't worked because your headache doesn't go away. But if you are on your thyroid medication and you are counteracting the effect of the thyroid, you're only going to find out when you go back to your doctor in 6 months' time for a blood test and an examination. And that means you're 6 months down the track and you've lost all that time. So, yeah, those things are really important. And, of course, certain antibiotics. Classics are antibiotics taken for bladder infections. Most people start, they get the symptoms of a bladder infection, and they start taking citric soda. Absolutely perfect, nothing wrong with it. but it doesn't work. They contact their doctor and they go on an antibiotic, but many of the antibiotics used for a bladder infection are counteracted by citrus soda.
Ah.
So unless it's communicated between the patient and the pharmacist, he takes them concurrently and they don't work. So we need to know, only start your antibiotic 2 hours after you've taken your last citrus soda.
Okay.
Makes all the difference.
Okay. You've really made some great, very easy to understand case studies there for the importance of keeping the lines of communications open there. Thanks for explaining it so clearly. And I want to bring in Dr. Maharaj at this point, because Gillian's flagged one of the issues there being when you are both taking prescription meds and using over-the-counter things that you have purchased for yourself for self-medication. As part of SMAS, the Self-Medication Manufacturers Association, mm-hmm. I would guess that's one of your big issues, making sure that that patients are using self-medication responsibly.
Definitely. I think that's the most important point. You know, being an informed consumer is more important than anything. And also, I agree with Gillian, sharing that information with your pharmacist. You know, when you go to pick up a chronic prescription, to share with your pharmacist, you know, what health supplements you're taking just to boost energy. A lot of patients are taking complementary medicines that they forget can have interactions with prescription medication. Also, you know, by not telling your pharmacist what you're taking, you, like Julian said, you could be taking a cough mixture, or you could be taking a general headache tablet that could interact with your chronic medication or prescription medications. So I think what SMARSA's role is really to advocate responsible, informed self-medication, which is, I think, critical and plays a big role in today's healthcare system.
Absolutely. Gillian, let's get back to your list. We've spent quite a long time on the communication, but that was just one of five things that you wanted your customers to know and be mindful of. Well, what else was on your list?
Well, I think, obviously, storage and disposal. So when you get your medication home, what are you going to do with it? I think generally medicines need to be kept in cool, dry places, but very importantly, they need to be safe. I recently went to a lecture by the poisons unit at Rondebosch, the Red Cross Children's Hospital. Most of the poisons cases are toddlers who are just learning to walk and climb and open cupboards, and they're getting into everything. And, of course, they watch their parents swallow a pill. They want to do the same thing. So, obviously, keeping things under lock and key in that instance, or really in a high place.
Mm.
And I think also to remember, a lot of medicines are not only heat sensitive, but also light sensitive. So a dark cupboard, probably better than an open shelf.
Okay.
And then disposal. You come into the pharmacy, you're sick, you've got diarrhea, vomiting, you take home your medication, you use it until you get better, and then you put the leftover box into your medicine chest and you forget all about it. And over a year or two, that accumulates. You've got a cough mixture, flu medication, and there they all sit and they expire. And you have a big clean out one day and you think, oh, what am I going to do with all these things? And I know that far too much stuff is being flushed down the toilet or thrown into the dirt bin. And then that medication ends up in a landfill, arbitrary landfill somewhere, or in our municipal water supply, which is really not good. So I think, in fact, one of the questions I think that was posed to you is safe disposal.
Mm.
It's best to take your medicines back to the pharmacy where you bought it. And all pharmacies should have a disposal procedure, standard operating procedure in place. They will have a contract, should have a contract with a registered disposal company. And those disposal companies are registered with the government, and they have very, very strict operating procedures to make sure that medicines are disposed of in the right place and in the right way.
It's such an important topic. I mean, I did a clean out of a cupboard, and I'm embarrassed to say there in the back was a bottle of, for example, of Ponstol from when my kids were small.
Yes.
That must have been 7 years past its expiry date. Now, nobody had taken it. I found it, and I sat there with this dilemma of what to do with it. But Gillian, I mean, medicines do have expiry dates on them, just as foodstuffs do, don't they?
No, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And they are boxes and bottles out there, tons and tons of them.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay, so two-way communication, effective storage and disposal. What else would you like your customers to know?
I would like to encourage patients on chronic medication. There are many people who take medicines for months and months, people on antidepressants, but also people with lifelong illnesses, with the high blood pressure, cholesterol, the metabolic syndrome that we all know about. They are put on medicines, and sometimes we see scripts with 6, 7, and 8 items on them. Mm. And they resent being on them, and they resent having to pay for them. It's a hassle to come into the pharmacy to collect their stuff. And very often they skip a month here or there, or they stop taking them. And the problem is a lot of those conditions are what we call the silent killers. Mm. So you stop taking them and you feel just as good as you ever did, but the damage has been done at what we call end organ. So your kidneys are suffering, your feet. You know, a diabetic is not controlled, they're not getting enough oxygen through to their toes. The nerves die first of all, so they can't feel pain. Then they develop a terrible ulcer. They don't know they've got the ulcer. And then they have to have a foot amputated. Mm. So they really need to be totally in control of their wellness. And pharmacists need to encourage, and they need to just be on top of it.
Okay, importance
good
of
positive
sticking.
Positive attitude.
Okay. Mm. Right, importance of sticking to chronic medications is number 3. What's number 4?
Number 4, I think, very importantly, to treat the condition appropriately. And I'm talking now about substance abuse. I think that codeine is a big problem.
Yep.
People will have a little headache and take a big guns painkiller, when actually a simple Panado or a little anti-inflammatory would have done just as well. Mm. A classic that we see very often is girls with period pains. They go to the cupboard and take something that contains 2 or 3 things, including codeine, take it for 5 or 6 days at a time, and then you know what? Then they take it every day. And there is a lot of codeine addiction out there, and I think a lot of those things are in over-the-counter preparations, and people need to be very, very aware of it.
I'm so glad you raised that, and Gillian, it actually taps into a conversation we had on Tuesday in our Family Matters segment about the misuse of Ritalin for purposes other than managing ADD and ADHD. And it's important what you've said about how addictions can start with that simple act of just taking something for a small issue, and it becomes habit and suddenly becomes a much bigger problem. I want to bring Dr. Maharaj back in here, because obviously the misuse and the abuse of over-the-counter that you can pick up on your own is a huge issue for you in your particular field at SMASA. Medicines are they have different classifications which make the more addictive and more potentially dangerous substances harder to get hold of. But in terms of what is easily available over the counter, what are the ones that most concern you at SMASA when it comes to drugs that are routinely abused?
So I think, the most common one is really the cold and flu preparations that contain codeine in them. We've seen them being abused quite generally, and really by younger patients, as well as older ones that become dependent to it. So I think it's mainly the cold and flu preparations that you can get easy access to over the counter. But I think the main thing to really reiterate to patients and the listeners is really to understand why you're taking something. And generally, the addiction is really sparked from more inherent psychological problems that is just fueled by this dependence that happens on these OTC products. For me, my message to your listeners is really read the label. Make sure, you're taking the OTC self-medication product for what it's indicated for, so that you're only taking it for the cold and flu symptoms or for the indication or the issue that you're having. If you're taking it for a longer period of time, then you know dependence has developed, and you should seek professional help for that. And for parents, my advice is, monitor your young ones. Generally, if you notice their behaviors changing, their attitudes changing, really look and see what has changed. What is it that they're taking that could have sparked this? And ensure that you're getting involved, because I think a lot of this happens because of poor choices and ill-informed self-medication decisions.
Thank you for that. Gillian, what was your final rule or final point that you wanted to make that you wish your patients knew?
Well, it's not really what I wish they knew, but I think it's very important, and I think it goes back to a healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It cannot be overemphasized. I think that preventative health is much better than curative health care. And I think that humor really is the best medicine.
So prevention is better than cure. You'd rather they weren't coming into your pharmacy at all, Gillian.
Well, we sell a lot of things to boost your immune system.
Fair enough. Okay, fair enough. Very, very important point that if you look after yourselves preemptively, you can head off some of the big things before they become a problem. I want to just touch on something that you mentioned, Gillian, when you were talking about storage and disposal of medicines. I've got lots of people saying, I didn't know that I could take my meds back to my pharmacy. I know now, thank you, to go and ask for that disposal bin. But one of the things you talked about in storage was the importance of keeping them locked away from kids and not taking medicine in front of kids, for example, so that they try to copy what you do. Dr. Maharaj, I want to go one step further. When we as parents are administering medication to our parent, our children, we also have to be very, very careful about the dosage, don't we? I think a lot of people think that if you just do a half dose of an adult medication for a child, that should be good enough, but it really isn't.
No, definitely. I think, you know, that's why we have specific medicines indicated for specific age groups. So please do not give adult medication to younger children. Their immune, their bodies, their physiological body is not made up to actually, you know, break down that active ingredient and to excrete it on time, and generally will result in overdosage for them and major, major side effects. So I think focus on taking the pediatric formulations that are there for your children, especially younger children. And I think the most important thing for me is, you know, dosage is not based on age. For younger kids, it must be based on weight.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at especially analgesic medications, now manufacturers are putting the weight based on the dose range that they have. So for paracetamol, don't just think I've got a baby who's 8 months, so I should be giving them half a medicine measure for. Pay particular attention to their weight, because that child could be slightly underweight for that age category and would need a much smaller dose. To ensure that their body can actually break down that active ingredient and excrete it, and, you know, not result in any overdosage. So especially with paracetamol, make sure you're dosing based on weight and not on age.
Thank you so much. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Some very valuable advice that you've shared. And here's a WhatsApp message saying, wow, I take thyroid meds, antacid and antibiotics. All of that advice you gave applied to me. Thank you so much for informing me. What a great way to finish. Gillian Watson, co-owner and pharmacist at MChem, thanks so much for your list of five important rules. It's really been valuable information you've shared with us. Thanks for joining me.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
And thank you too to you, Dr. Deepa Maharaj, who's the chairperson at SMASA, the Self-Medication Manufacturers Association of South Africa. Deepa, I know you've got great guidelines on things like first aid kits and what to keep in the home, etc. Is there a website we can direct listeners to have a look at that information?
Yes, definitely. So if you go on to www.smaza.co.za, you'll be able to get sufficient information, or just contact our executive director, Nicola Brink, and we'll definitely be more than happy to provide information.
Dr. Deepa Maharaj, thank you for joining as well today. Smasa, SMASA.co.za.